for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 649 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, accomplished creator Dave Swartz talks about his current Kickstarter campaign for Confederate Monster. Dave has been a professional comic book illustrator for 10 years. His current crowdfunding campaign is on Kickstarter, and it's described this way. The South will rise undead when the story of Frankenstein meets the Civil War. We discuss how this Confederate Monster comic book series came to be, Dave's unique take on these classic characters, and what we can expect from him in the coming months. Don't miss this excellent conversation, then support this already successful crowdfunding campaign that wants your support before it concludes on Friday, June 26 at 12 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Dave has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode. So let's get on with the show. After a three-year hiatus, Confederate Monster is back. Picking up after the events of Issue 3, the all-new Issue 4 will follow Daniel and Victor as they make their daring escape from their Confederate captors. It's not long before they run into the original Frankenstein monster, who has quite the story to catch them up on. And the writer, creator, and designer of this great comic is Dave Swartz, who I'm talking with tonight. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Wayne?
Good to talk with you. This is a really interesting book, I have to say. I got to read the first issue, and I got to read some of the previews of 4, which is out, by the way. We have to mention right away, people get on me because I don't do this soon enough. This is on Kickstarter right now, and it's called Confederate Monster number 1-4, and the project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Friday, July 26th. At 12 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That's midnight, I think, for some of us. And the good news is, as we talked a little bit before we started to record, congratulations are in order. Your goal of $3,000 has been surpassed even as we're talking. So good for you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a nice surprise to wake up to today.
That's great. Oh, there's nothing better because, you know, I always tease people because I've done Kickstarters once or twice. And the creators are forever going, refresh, 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 refresh. And you're terrified. Oh, no, it's been 2 weeks and nobody has pledged in 24 hours and that they're never going to do it again. Yeah. And so when you get there, this is, you know, of course, somebody could always cancel their pledge. We don't do that. But the thing to do now is after you get done listening to our conversations, to get out there and go to Kickstarter and support it, because the more that Dave gets out of this good stuff, the more he can go forward and make more issues of Confederate Monsters. So that's a great thing. So I encourage you, get out there and support it as much as you can. So it's good stuff.
Thank you.
Now, the thing, of course, I told you I was going to ask this question. I'm just going to curious to see what your answer is going to be. Whenever a book is called something, I always want to know why it's called that. And this book is called Confederate Monster. And I'm just sort of curious, and of course, we haven't even gotten into who all the characters are yet. Who's the Confederate Monster? Is that something we need to read the book to find out?
Well, I've pretty much been telling people that the moniker of Confederate Monster is really something that I think almost every character in the book wears. the premise for me was really about how can I create a horror story where there really is no like good character. Even though we have protagonists, we have those who are, you know, trying to fight against the forces of evil. Those characters are still, you know, they have a dark past. They are not angels. So I think in that way, you know, I wanted to really make this world very sort of spooky and horrific and monstrous, to really mirror the themes of both the Frankenstein story and the events of the Civil War.
And what's really interesting to me is that this takes place about 8 years after the original Frankenstein story by Mary Shelley, right?
Correct.
And the thing I'm curious is that, and you'll see this out too if you go and look at the Kickstarter page. Some of the characters are not the way that you may remember them originally in the story. And the main one that surprised me is a character by the name of Dr. Daniel, what's his last name?
Schmidt,
yeah.
Yes.
Talk about that character, if you would, because that's a real interesting character to me.
So, yeah, when I originally conceived of how I was going to tell the story and what character's sort of perspective I wanted to tell it largely through, I'm always a big proponent of subverting expectation and just sort of changing it up a little. And so when I really took a look at what had already been done with the characters from the Frankenstein story, in other, either literary or pop culture, stories, I really noticed that it was largely told from either Victor's point of view or the monster's point of view. And so I wanted to, again, change it up, and I landed on Igor, but in my opinion, I thought, well, what would Igor have done if he was not necessarily, because again, my Igor is very different. He's not a classic sort of servant. He's more of an assistant. So he's just as smart as Victor. He's just as capable. And so with that smarts and capability, what would he have done with his life after these, the events that created the monster transpired? So, in my mind, I thought, well, he would probably take on another identity and go into hiding and rebuild his life. And so Dr. Daniel Schmidt is actually Igor. He is just a different version of Igor, now living in Confederate Virginia, and working as a reconstructive surgeon who specializes in prosthetic limbs for the soldiers who are coming back from war disfigured.
See, that surprised me. I do have to tell you that. I got a chance to read the first issue, and I do have to say I was very surprised by that. And I thought that was a wonderful something. I've seen the Frankenstein story, like you said. I've seen it told many different times, and this is the first time I've ever seen it told this way.
And that was exactly what I was going for. So I appreciate that you pick up on that, because I spent a lot of time myself absorbing, pop culture references to these characters, and not just, throughout the course of my life, but in researching the book and making sure that, not only could I bring maybe some, aspects of what had already been done as nice little Easter eggs, but then using that as inspiration for how I could tell the story a little differently.
See, I like what there's a description on the Kickstarter page. It says, for all his charm and brilliance, Daniel hides a monstrous past. And that's a great sentence.
Thank you.
I just was like, what the? Because it's just, if you want to see the story told from a whole different perspective, this is the place to go for it. Because, man, the fact that he was a reconstructive surgeon.
Right.
Igor. I put Igor, reconstructive surgeon, in the same sentence. I was like, really? That is something different. And I have to say, well, that's not the only surprise, It says in here, there's new twists, shocking revelations about these beloved literary characters. And boy, are there. There's one of my favorite things in the whole book. If you read the first issue, and it's been out for a while now, so I don't think I'm spoiling anything. But Igor's wife, her hair looks like the Bride of Frankenstein's at a party.
Yes.
When I saw that, I went, oh, okay. Okay, now I see what's going on here. Because there's some preview pages for issue 4. And what I saw has, I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say something interesting takes place by issue four, which I really, really was very surprised at. And I just thought, gosh, this book is, I didn't think that this story could be told to where I was surprised anymore, but you have really accomplished that tremendously.
Oh, thank you so much. That's a great compliment. I really appreciate that.
Because I have to tell you something. I have seen a lot of Frankensteins, and I have seen, I mean, DC Comics has their own version of Frankenstein's monster and all this stuff, and there's all these different things going on with it. I have not read this story before. And I have to tell you, after I've been reading comics a long time, and there's nothing better to me than something I haven't read before. So I can highly recommend this to people and say, if you want something you ain't seen before, and let me tell you, like I said, I haven't been unsurprised by several different versions of the Frankenstein monster. This one shocks me. I love to be surprised. There's nothing better in this whole world than for me to be surprised. So I really love this. I want to spoil all kinds of stuff, but I'm just not going to, because I want people to enjoy it because it's so great. I do have to ask you, though. You set this in the final months of the American Civil War, as it says on the Kickstarter page, and a secret Confederate plot is unfolding, which again surprised me. why American Civil War? Is that a time period you particularly like, or it was just something that was because it was close to what Mary Shelley had done? Why that?
Well, I think you actually kind of picked up on a little bit of the reason. I was looking for a different setting, a different time period. Because I don't want to rehash a ton of what's already been done. So I was sort of in the market, you know, for a new, like I said, setting, time period. When I went looking for what was out there, what was possible, I really didn't want to do anything that was too modern. And I really didn't want to do anything that was too overdone. Settings like World War II, World War I, even things like the Vietnam War, anything like that. I wanted to take it further back, but I didn't want to go all the way back to the original. So I really kind of landed on the Civil War because I felt like not only is it something that, I don't think I've seen the Frankenstein characters set in that time period, but I don't really think a lot of stories are really set in that time period, because in the States we do have a lot of baggage when it comes to the Civil War. It's not some far away nefarious villain that we fought. It was ourselves. So I think because of that, it's sometimes a little more difficult to sell the story, because people are still pretty sensitive to it. However, since it is a horror story, and when I researched more and more about the Civil War, I just started to find more and more interesting similarities between the themes of both both the Frankenstein story and the stories that came out of the Civil War.
Now, see, 99 out of 100 Frankenstein stories are set in Europe.
Right. Yep,
so I was very surprised by that. And of course, I'm a big Civil War fan myself. I've gone to like Civil War sites and stuff like that. And I went back when the original Civil War show was on PBS, I went up to like Gettysburg and stuff like that. And I saw, I took the tours and stuff like that because I was really interested in stuff like that. And so this is in my wheelhouse, I have to say.
Right on.
All the things that I find it very accurate too, by the way, to the Civil War. Instead of, again, when people go to the Civil War, depending on which side they think should have won or something, they change things up. And I'm always going like, no, that's not the way that kind of went. But this is very accurate to that. Now, of course, introducing Victor Frankenstein is an interesting thing to me because I never heard his name anywhere near the Civil War, but I thought the way you did it was really inventive and creative. Oh, shall I say? Very, very well done. It says here in the description on the, and by the way, too, as I said on the Kickstarter page, there are descriptions of several of the characters. It says Victor is a shell of his former self when we first meet him. However, he has been planning for this moment since the very beginning.
That I gotta see all this kind of stuff. I don't think we've yet discovered what this guy has in mind. So talk about Victor Frankenstein as far as that goes, because I think you do a very different version of even that character than what I'm used to seeing.
Right. I was really my core kind of inspiration for these characters and the characterization was to subvert expectation and to take them in a different direction that they've been, taken before. And, so it is again, nice to be able to take the story in a different time that's set after the events that we almost, I think collectively are familiar with these characters, 8 years after the monster has been revived. And, I was asking myself at the time, what would have happened to Victor after, all of this went down? And, in my mind, I came up with the idea that, I think he probably would have found his butt in an asylum. What happens to Victor Frankenstein if he's in an asylum for 8 years? So when we first meet him, he's just absolutely out of his mind. He's emaciated. He has this wicked mane hair and beard going on. And when we see him, he's literally biting the heads off of rats. So he is absolutely out of his mind. Speaking in like limericks and little rhyming puzzles and things, which was actually quite fun to write the dialogue for that introduction. It's a very different Victor, but I don't think it's too far off from what might have come of that character had, we been able to visit him 8 years later.
Well, the line between genius and insanity is not a thick one for some people. So
that's true.
I can buy that stuff. Now, I want to get to a couple ones I want to talk about. The monster, not the Confederate monster, the monster.
Right.
I got to read this little paragraph here because it entertains me. Probably the most recognizable as the classic version of the character. Yet, at the same time, his story is very different than anything that has come before. Plus, my version is more of a cowboy outlaw than a mindless beast. I have never seen that before, I have to tell you. However, his newfound intelligence does not inhibit his ability to kick some major butt. That's a monster I haven't seen before. So how did this version of the monster come about for you?
Well, again, it was the same type of process where I was really trying to look at what these characters would have done had they been given some time, after the original, story. So, I was inspired by some of the original takes on the monster where he sort of just wanders aimlessly and sort of finds his way through life and, in ways sort of, encounters people that, we get to explore his intelligence a little bit. Maybe he gets to even learn, a little bit more about life. And in my characterization of the monster, when he first is reanimated, he is absolutely insane and just mad with rage. That's really, in my opinion, inspired by, what I think it would actually be like if you were dead for a long time and were brought back. I think it would be a little jarring. So, to say the least. So I think, when he first is reanimated, he just literally breaks loose and goes on a rampage through the village. And, it's a bloody massacre that they call the Night of Horror. And, so after that though, he wanders off into the forest, kind of never to be seen again type thing. However, in issue 4, we get to explore what happened to him after he wandered off and how he was able to regain some of his intelligence. He doesn't have all of his memories. He's still quite stricken with amnesia. But at the same time, he can speak, he can read, he can communicate. But he is very much driven by his hunger and thirst for blood.
Now, Cowboy Outlaw, that was a thing that, surprised me. So you're going to explain how he got to America and became a cowboy outlaw?
So I'm not going to explain exactly how he became a cowboy. However, what okay. I'm going to do is explain how he did get to America and why he came to America. And so, yes, partly yes, partly no. At least not
okay, all right.
I will say.
You're not going to put all your cards on the table at the same time.
Well, I mean, I got to hold something back.
Now, the last one that is introduced on the Kickstarter page is The Bride, which I think is the fewer adjectives, I think, the better for this one. It says, my version of The Bride is reminiscent of the original. However, I take elements of The Monster's Bride and Victor's Bride and mix them together, creating an all-new character that isn't just meant to be a companion. Ooh, see, once again, I'm like, ooh, that is something different. I mean, usually the bride is just kind of a, gosh, I that's a word I can't use, but not the smartest woman in the world. When she becomes the bride of Frankenstein, she still maintains that place.
Right.
So to me, I'm going to be interested to see what you have in mind for the bride, because when I see the character in the early issues, I'm very intrigued as to what is going to happen with her. So I'm fascinated. I mean, you've got me interested and intrigued by how she's coming around and her role with her husband and stuff like that is, God, just really fascinates me. I can't wait to see what you've got in mind for her.
Well, thank you. Yeah, she comes more into play. Well, I mean, she's more a big part of issue 3, I would say. So that's an issue you can get with this Kickstarter. But you know, she becomes more of her. I think of any other character in the book, I think she has the biggest transformation from beginning to end. And so, in issue 5 and then into issue 6, the final issue, you really get to see her, you know, come into her new sort of self, and embrace, you know, this monstrous person that she's now sort of become.
So she's a monster too.
She is. There's not a single character that is saved.
Oh, wow. Okay, interesting. So the Battle of the Monsters here. That's when I saw, and it's just a single Confederate monster in the title, I thought, wait a second, because I started looking at the character, and I said, which one? And it sounds like you're saying that it kind of depends on who you're reading at the moment.
Exactly. That's kind of my thing when it comes to writing. I mean, I am more of an artist than I am a writer, but you know, when I write, I typically enjoy to, you know, add a little bit of that, you know, interesting sort of intrigue, and you know, not really quite defining everything, so that in that way the audience can, or the reader can at least, you know, kind of come to their own conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. I love a book that doesn't talk down to me. Mm-hmm. Even all ages books, I don't think, have to talk down to the reader. And so when I read something like this, I love a story that surprises me. Like I said, a good shock or two, boy. It goes from a good book to a great book when that kind of thing happens. That's what I think your book is a great book. And I haven't even seen 4 through 6 yet. So I'm dying to see it. Now, we should talk about the stuff that's available out there. And I think one of the reasons why I think the pledges have gone so high, there is what's called the Confederate Monster, your physical catch-up for $70. You get all 4 issues plus the number 0, which is like a prequel. So talk about the prequel a little bit, because we haven't talked about that.
Sure. So for the first 3 issues, I did the first 3 issues as like my COVID project. When we were all, you know, locked down, I took it as my opportunity to get back into a book of my own for a change. I'm a professional comic book artist. So I work for other writers, creators as my day job. And, you know, as you well know, the process can be quite long and involved. So, you know, doing my own book can sometimes, again, take up a ton of time. So I really wanted to, you know, make sure that I spent that time during COVID doing something for myself. And so this was it. And I was able to get through half of the book. The book is 6 issues long total. But in doing an Indiegogo for the first 3 issues, which was something that a lot of people just asked me for because they really wanted to read the story. In doing that, it did well. So one of the stretch goals I came up with was doing this little prequel story, which is basically a story that's self-contained, and it tells the story of how we bridge the gap between the events of the original Mary Shelley book and this book. So you get a chance to sort of, you know, see that exactly what happened when the monster went on his rampage. You get to kind of see how Victor and Igor at the time interact at that time, because it's a little different than how they interact in Confederate Monster. And it's all done in black and white. So it's a very clear, different time period. It has a different sort of, you know, overall look. You know, one of my favorite things that I did in that book that I don't normally do, but I felt it was necessary, was, you know, I typically draw a lot of my blood just kind of like Ryan Ottley style, where it's just a contained sort of line, and then you fill it in with red. But for the black and white, the blood really needed to be like jet ink black in order to make enough of an impact, I thought. So when you see the monster in the prequel book, he's just always just covered in blood. You know, so again, I wanted to create something that was a little self-contained story that you could just, you know, read the whole thing and you didn't have to collect a ton of issues. But it also helped to just expand the overall story.
Now, I got to go back to the original thing that we talked about. There was a 3-year delay. Yes. And was that because of the pandemic? Is that what caused the 3-year delay?
No, the 3-year delay, honestly, was just my inability to be able to balance what I needed to do for my work life and my personal life. Because I really see Confederate Monster, even though it is my work, I see it as more of a personal project. And so for me, doing art full time, you know, in order for me to complete the projects that I need to complete in order to, you know, pay my bills, I need to, you know, hit a certain amount of pages per week. And so when I first started doing this a couple of years ago, you know, full-time art, it was hard. It was really hard to be able to get all of it done in the right amount of time. And so now, though, I've really been able to pick up my pace. I've been able to hone my process to a place where I think I can draw and color almost faster than anybody. And I say that with confidence because I've worked with a lot of different people and they all say the same thing. So I'm really confident in what I can do now, and much more so than when I first started this book. So I'm happy to come back. And I'm basically taking a day a week to work on Confederate Monster ongoing until it's finished. Because I gotta finish it. I feel really bad leaving the fans of the original Kickstarter or the original crowdfunder hanging for so long. So like I said, I really want to get back and finish it up for those reasons.
It's so good to hear you say that, because there have been so many crowdfunding things that I have backed that I have never seen fulfilled. Right. And there was one that I backed about 4 years ago. And all of a sudden in the mail one day, a couple of weeks ago, I got the book. And I was like, oh, it really is. They really did do it. They finally got it done. And so I was, anybody who feels that conscientious about it, I have to tell you, support, because that is a wonderful thing. When somebody does that, because I've seen people on Kickstarter say, well, you know, if you give me the money, I'll think of the comic and I'll put it out when I get it eventually done. And yeah, people are always saying, no, put the comic, give us something. Don't just do that. And so it's nice to see somebody conscientious about that, because there have been several people that I have given money to that I just basically paid their bills or something, apparently.
Right.
So I'm always sad about that. Now, there are several other levels, of course, you can do. You can get the digital edition of 4. There's 2 different covers that you can get. There's the digital catch-up sale for $25, which I really like. And then there is the Dave Swartz Digital Library, $80. You get basically almost everything you've ever done, including Bloodsmith, Vampire Detective in Space, Feast or Famine, which I got to read, which I really enjoyed. And then there's the mini commission for $80. And you've got the picture of the bride on there, shall we say.
Yeah.
Now, I do have to ask you about the cover, though. The main cover shows what I think is the Frankenstein monster wearing the hat. And then we got another monster to the front. And his chest is torn open. And we see what looks to be, is that the same monster walking through a forest in there? What's going on with that?
So, like I said, in issue 4, we get a chance to see where the monster has been for the last 8 years. And his journey is pretty tough. You know, he has to be able to get through his very challenging emotions, especially without any, you know, real guidance or understanding about who he is, what he's doing, you know, what's happening around him. So he's in a state of fear, really, in the beginning. But, you know, as we continue, we get to see how, you know, he's able to expand his mind, and it's a little different and interesting. I don't want to give it away too much. But I think once you get into it and you start to see, you know, what is the mechanism that I use in order to unlock his unconscious mind, it does sort of have this dreamy, you know, sort of quality to it, which sort of lends itself to these interesting scenes that I put together on the cover. And again, the issue is all about the psyche of the monster and how he's able to tackle it and challenge it and, you know, come out on the other end much more well put together mentally. So in that way, I kind of wanted to translate what that must feel like on the cover. So there's a lot of fire and rage and blood, but there's also these moments of solitude and self-reflection and feeling alone, you know. And so, again, that was my main inspiration for this sort of collage approach, if you will.
Interesting. I can't wait to read that book. Now, I noticed that there's a change in the number of pages from issue to issue. Issue 0 has 20 pages, and issue 1, which I got to read, has 40 pages. And then there's 20 pages in every one after that. And I do have to say, if you're a fan of The Bride, you may not want to look at the cover of issue 3. Because, yike!
Yeah.
that is an interesting cover, I do have to say. I thought 4 was going to be. Then when I went down and looked at the cover of issue 3, I went, ooh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. I can't look at it too long, but so there's all kinds of wonderful. Then we get to other stuff that you've done. And there's, like I said, the Vampire Detective in Space, I just love. I thought that was something great that you did. And you did the art on that, which I thought was spectacular.
Thank you.
I haven't read Bloodsmith yet, but I'm going to. I read Feast or Famine, which I enjoyed. I thought that was a great book.
Thank you.
Something I've got to ask you about, because you have done basically the whole spectrum when it comes to comics. You can write, you can do the artwork. I've seen issues where you've just done the color. Uh-huh. And then there's been times when you've done other, you know, different combinations of all those different things. Like with this book, are you writing a script before you draw the issue or do the issue? And do you follow the stages, or do you do like a whole page? You draw the page and do the coloring and all that, and the lettering, and then you go to the next page. Or how is it you approach these? Because you could do it any way you want, basically.
Yeah, that's true. And honestly, I don't think I've really tried to do almost like that traditional like Marvel method where you would do the art first and then, you know, kind of fill in the dialogue from there, you know, based off of an outline for a story. But it would honestly, that would be an interesting exercise to say the least. But no, I typically go more of a traditional route with the process. I just sort of treat, you know, myself as the team. So, you know, I start off with the writing and I write the entire thing before I even pick up a pencil to do a character design. even though I might have a fairly good vision in my mind of what I want to create, I really try not to jump too far ahead of myself. I want the process to feel like it is organic and natural to the normal process that a comic book would be made. And also, I want to give myself a chance to allow for other, you know, fresher kind of ideas to come through in the writing stage. And if I jump too far ahead with the art, you know, I might need to make a drastic change to what I've already created if, say, I come up with a better idea or a more, you know, interesting angle in which to take the scene or the story or the character or even in the entire issue, you know. So I do quite a lot of pre-planning. I do all the writing first. I don't start any artwork until I'm solid with the writing. I think in that way, I treat myself almost like the creative team's all inside my head, you know.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Because you could do it any way you want, but you choose to do it more of a traditional route. So I find that really interesting.
It makes me feel more comfortable, honestly, too. I mean, this is the way that I work most of the time, you know, when I do work for other creators. So yeah, I feel like it's just kind of more of a natural way for me to do it.
Now, before I let you go, there are two other books that are coming to Kickstarter this very month. Do you want to talk about what? Let's see. Which one do you want to start with?
Are you talking about the other books that I'm working on?
Yeah, this is here. I've got two other books I worked on coming to Kickstarter this month. Special look at each. Don't forget to click the covers to back these books too. I guess we can go and it looks like alpha order, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you what. So one of those projects, the Undercity Tales, I believe is already wrapped. So I don't know. I don't think that one's available anymore. However, I'm hopeful that we'll get back into the world of Undercity and that they'll ask me back. It was a very fun book. That one was basically set in a world where there's an underground city deep below the Earth's surface where a big population of aliens from all over the cosmos live. And it's sort of like a 50s noir kind of style to the technology, but there's still this like high alien tech that's like mixed in along the way. So it's very interesting fantasy sci-fi type stuff. And then the other book that's still on Kickstarter is called Don't Talk to the Dead. And that's sort of like the Goonies meets Dante's Inferno. So it's a group of teenagers who have an experience with a Ouija board that goes wrong. They summon a demon that comes forth to steal one of their souls. And so they have to journey into hell to battle the demon to retrieve their friend's soul.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I got to go back to the first one because the description intrigued me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're writing these good things, but something always just surprises me. This is the second issue is a romantic, fast-paced death ride. Mm-hmm. A romantic death ride. I've never seen that before. And so I literally went, a romantic death ride. How in the world does that work?
So the Undercity Tales series, each issue is a self-contained story. So issue one really has nothing to do with the story of issue two. But issue two is just that, you know, it's about a couple that have a dream to get out of their rather challenging situations, to be able to reach the surface of the earth and, you know, kind of escape their, you know, their hard lives. And so in doing so, they're chased after their employers, and those employers are none too happy to see them leave. So there's car chases and gunfights and, you know, fist fights and all kinds of gnarly things. But no, it's the artwork was really fun to work on. You know, the descriptions that were given to me from the writer, Scott Wilkie, were really fun to interpret. Again, this world is very unique. So I really kind of had to think some things through of how I wanted to, you know, how I wanted to depict it. Plus the characters are alien. So it's always fun to do some, you know, character design for aliens and, you know, come up with what's the best look, you know, for the story.
I got to see the romantic death ride. That's the thing. I just don't know how that works.
Yeah, no, it's fun. Trust me. It's very fun.
Okay. So these are all the good things. I guess they're both from Bad Bug. So maybe if you go to their website, maybe you might be able to
Catch up on some
of that. I don't know. Eventually they will. I'm sure. Now, of course, we've gotten that. Let's again go back to Confederate Monster 1-4. I need to again say that this project will only be funded, even though it's crossed its goal. It's not over yet until it reaches its goal by Friday, July 26th at 12 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Don't wait until that point. Once you get done listening to this, be sure to get out there and support it, because I don't know, maybe if Dave gets enough this time, maybe he might have to not do another Kickstarter next time or something. You just never know how this works.
Yeah. Well, and hey, maybe if we generate enough, I might be able to take a little time off work and get the next issue done even faster. Who knows?
Wouldn't that be nice?
That'd be great.
Pace. Now, speaking of which, if people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
So that's pretty easy. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. They all share the same handle. So you can find me at Dave Swartz Art. And that's actually the same for my website. So my website's daveswartzart.com. Pretty easy to find me out there.
Very good, very good. And of course, it's SWARTZ.
Correct.
Just for people who need to know, because the internet is unforgiving when it comes to spelling. So we got to make sure we get that right. Now,
right.
Are you, because now people that we talked about the pandemic, some stuff, now that the pandemic is pretty much passed us by, are you going back to personal appearances? Are you going to cons? What's the story with that with you?
Sure. You know, right now I don't have a lot of plans to go back to cons, mainly because, you know, I feel like, unless I have a really good, you know, new product to put out there, it is, you know, cons are nice, but they are difficult to make money when you're only selling floppies. So, you know, when I get a trade collection of Confederate Monster, I think I may do a nice little, you know, tour of some Comic Cons in my little local area of the country. You know, just to get more eyes on the collected edition. It would make more sense for me. But you know, with that said, I do have a soft spot for Comic Cons. I've been going to them since I was 8 years old. My Uncle Joe just took me and my brother when we were really young. I remember about an hour in wanting to leave because my feet hurt, but you know, that's an 8 year old talking. I definitely want to get back into Comic Cons. I just want to make sure that it's not, you know, breaking my bank to be there.
Right. As somebody who has been on both sides of the table at Comic Cons, you can lose your shirt at some of these Comic Cons.
That is
the truth.
That's correct.
Sad to say. Now, you answered a question, of course, that I forgot to ask. Are you considering putting this together in a collected version? It sounds like you are once this is done. Are you thinking of maybe Kickstartering that?
Yeah. So my plan right now is to do a Kickstarter for a collected edition. I want to see exactly how it all shakes out, but one of my things that I I'm really wanting to do. I just got to make sure that I can get a printer that not only can do it, but can do it well. I really would like to get a hardcover edition of it. When it's all done, it's going to be roughly 180 pages. So I feel like it's a pretty hefty book. And I, and honestly, because of the themes of the book, I think making a hardcover edition would be just a dream come true for me. I think when I first started this book, back in, I first came up with the pitch in 2015. And so it's been quite a while since I first, you know, came up with it. And when I did, a hardcover edition of it was really, I think, calling out to me, like, yeah, I think this is the book. If you're ever going to do a hardcover, this would be the book.
Sounds good. Well, if you ever do a sequel, you can always call that one Confederate Monsters.
Right. You can do all kinds of things.
You can do whatever you'd like with the sequel to that. Do you actually have a sequel in mind, or do you think this is going to pretty much tell the story from your point of view?
I mean, I think this one will tell the story that of Frankenstein. But who knows? Ooh. You know, maybe I could explore some other, you know, classic monsters that we're all very aware of. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, I'm glad you're thinking about it, because that's a good sign for me. That means there's, because I've enjoyed all the tremendous surprises and stuff you've been putting into this book. I haven't even read the last three issues yet, and I've been surprised all the way. So I'm hopeful you will do other good things like that. But even your art is spectacular to me. I just think you're great on whatever part of the spectrum you want to do. You go ahead and do it, because I think if I see your name on something, I'm going to be after it. Good stuff, because it's just wonderful stuff. Again, it's Confederate Monster number 1-4, and it's on Kickstarter. And for the last time, this project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Friday, July 26 at 12 midnight Eastern Daylight Time. Don't wait until then. Be sure to get out there and support it now, because this is a great book. And I've never read a Frankenstein story like this, and that's saying something. So be sure to get out there and support it. And Dave, wonderful, wonderful to talk with you, and great, great, great creation on your part. I can't wait to read it. I got to make sure I get the whole thing, because it's just great.
Thank you so much, Wayne. I appreciate all your kind words and support and having me on tonight.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.